Welcome to Career Tools. This week, DISC and presentation downfalls, High S. The questions this cast answers are, what are High S's likely to forget when presenting? And how do High S's increase effectiveness when presenting? There are lots of reasons to like MTDISC. It's simpler, it's smarter, and it's cheaper. But my favourite reason is that the report gives you pages of answers to the question, well, now, what do I do with this? See, it's all right very well to know you're a high D, but what does that mean when you come to a high S in a meeting? What should you change? How should you act? What does that mean in terms of your own relationships? We worked really hard to get that into the MTDISC report, and I'm glad to say that a lot of the feedback is people really being able to use that. So I encourage you to try it too. This is the third in our series of presentation downfalls casts. We've already done D and I, now we're on to S. We'll do C in about a month or so. And each of the DISC profiles has their own strengths and weaknesses. There are things that come easy to different profiles, and there are things that are more difficult for each of the profiles. And high I's find presenting the easiest, although it's not necessarily that they're the best, it's just that they don't mind being up in front of people and being the center of attention. And then the other thing is, each of us bring weaknesses to the presentations. Each of us have things that we're not good at, but that doesn't mean we can't overcome them, because we can do anything if we think about it first. We can behave any way we like if we think about it first. So that's what we're trying to help you with. Presentations come in a variety of forms: motivational, educational, briefings, instructive, problem solving, and so on. And so what we're talking about in this guidance specifically is business presentations, where you're trying to get a group to agree to your proposal. So as a high S, what are the things that you're most likely to stumble with if you're creating this kind of presentation? And we're going to try and help you not to stumble, to know where your weaknesses are and to mitigate them.
Right, exactly. Our outline for today is very simple. Number one is consider your audience. Number two is set a date. Number three is content. Number four is pre-wire. And number five is rehearse. Very, very simple.
Yeah. And I guess we should say before we start, if you don't know what a high S is and you're listening to this cast and go, I don't even know what one of those is. It's part of the MTDISC profile. It's a behavioral profile that tells other people and yourself how you prefer to communicate. And it's divided into two sets of two, almost. So there are assertive people and reserved people. There are people-focused people and task-focused people. And the combination of each of those, so people and task, for example, gives you the letter that you are, so D, I, S, or C. And S's are people-focused and reserved. And that means that they are the kind of people that talk softly and slowly and have a cushion when you go to their cube so that you'll be comfortable. They're the people that care about other people, but they like everything to be nice and calm and peaceful. And that gives them some benefits when they're presenting and some weaknesses.
The key to success for anyone presenting anything at any time is to consider the audience first. It isn't an instruction just for high S's. All profiles, everyone needs to do this. You may have heard us say maybe once or twice that communication is what the listener does. And sending the information in a manner that makes sense to the listener is how you make it easiest to understand for them. It's how you make it as effective as possible for them, because that's what matters, is how they internalize it, right? So high S's are the most likely of the four styles to consider other people, but perhaps you don't know how differently they think from you. In this guidance, we're going to give you some hints so that you can be helpful to them.
So as a high S, you like change to come slowly, if at all. You want to hear the rationale, the explanation, the details of why this would be good for the team. And other styles are much less bothered by this. High D's and I's can change their minds 10 times before it's time for you to change your socks. and they don't think twice about it. They're absolutely fine with it. In fact, if there isn't enough change going on, D's and I's will create some just to have some. And when you take your normal pace and include all of the information that you think is persuasive that would persuade you, all you're doing is irritating them. And they're less likely to agree with you, not more likely. So your natural style will cause the opposite of what you want if you use it, if those people in your audience are D's and I's. So you need to do some things differently.
Yeah, and you don't only consider their DISC profile. I mean, I can't think of a situation where you would have, when presenting, an entirely homogenous audience where everyone is high D or everyone is high I. Maybe close, but you would never have an audience where only one profile or a set of, you know, combination, only people-focused people or only task-focused people are there. So it's going to be difficult to cater to just one or two of the DISC profiles. So you have to keep different profiles in mind and understand the attributes of the audience.
So for example, how many people are you presenting to? That's not a DISC thing, but how many people are in the room makes a difference to the way you present because it affects the amount of interactivity you can have. You wouldn't do a presentation to four people in a room the same way that you would do it to 400. So yeah, the number of people is important.
Absolutely. Another thing to consider is how much specific knowledge does this audience have, right? This would dictate the level of detail that you can expect your audience to understand. If you're reviewing something that they are technical experts in, you're going to get a lot more granular questions. You need to cover much more down into the weeds of the material rather than a group that just has a surface level knowledge of what you're talking about.
How much general knowledge does the audience have? That dictates how much background you have to give them. So if it's, you know, a totally other division in your company that you're presenting to and they have no real idea apart from the title of your division, what your division does, you're going to have to explain that to them first before they understand anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Why does the audience believe they're attending this presentation? I mean, this is going to dictate how much time you'll need to spend directing their attention to where it needs to be. If they're not even sure why they're, you know, in the room, mm-hmm. you're going to spend a little bit more time aligning and setting the stage so that they understand the context of why you're there.
Exactly. And what else is the audience doing on this day? An audience that's at a conference and spends the entire day in presentations is really different to an audience that is only attending your presentation or has just come from another meeting or it's the beginning of the day or the end of the day. What else is happening in their day, not in your day, but in their day is important.
Yeah. Are you an outside vendor that's presenting something to them and they just got out of a 3-hour all-hands meeting? That is definitely important to know. So our next point is set a date. Once you have set a date for the presentation, meet that date no matter what. Not doing so shows weakness and also, more importantly, inconveniences others who have planned on viewing your presentation. You may never feel ready to give that presentation. You may never feel that you have thought enough about the topic, that you've consulted enough people, or that you know the subject deeply enough. You may never feel like it's the right time. There will always be one person who is knee-deep in a project, in conflict with a customer, or having a hard time at home. You may never be certain that this is the right recommendation.
Right. Is it a Churchill quote? Never take counsel of your fears.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And the secret is that no one else is any more prepared, finds a better time, or is any more certain than you are now. It's just that they're willing to move forward with a different level or this level of preparedness or uncertainty in a way that you are generally uncomfortable doing. You like to know that it's okay, it's done, and it's I'm in the right place and it's the right time and so on. And other people just go ahead and present. And that's why they present and then you're still thinking about it. So, and our teams need people like you.
Oh, yeah.
We need people who consider other people's feelings. If everybody was like me, then there would be lots of hurt feelings all over the place because I just ride roughshod. we need people who think about the effects of a proposal on people in the organization. We need people who take into account other people's thoughts. And on the flip side, we need to hear your ideas, your thoughts, your considerations because of that thinking that you put in, because of your awareness of how people are feeling, because of your awareness of the state of the team. We need to hear from you. And that means you have to stand up and do the presentation. And if you never present your idea, then the organization will never benefit from it.
Yeah. So while you're scheduling your meeting, set your, what we're going to call BATMAP.
We just invented this, right?
We just invented this. It's BATMP. Most of you probably don't have enough acronyms in your organization.
That's
so
true.
We want to add to that. Best alternative to my proposal. This is the equivalent to of a BATNA, which is the best alternative to a negotiated agreement.
That's the thing you go into a negotiation with the like, okay, if I don't get everything I want, I'm okay with this. This is my backstop. And so
right.
In the same way, it's going into this presentation, the BATMAP will be your backstop.
Right. It's like all those reality shows where they go in like negotiations. They say, you know, I'm going to offer, oh, you know what it's like? Pawn Stars. Maybe because I live in Las Vegas.
Pawn
Stars.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, people go in and they interview them before they go into the pawn shop and they say, you know, here's what I'm trying to pawn, whatever, you know, a replica of the Declaration of Independence or something. And they go in there and they say, I'm going to ask for $10,000, but I'll be okay. I'll be happy if I get six, right?
Exactly.
Like that's what a BATNA is.
Exactly.
Yep. So before you even speak to anyone, decide what your desired outcome is and what those other outcomes are that you would accept. This will help you when you get many different opinions on what the outcome should be. Instead of trying to please everyone, you fall back to what you've already predetermined is your BATMAP. This will give you a rock that you can stand upon instead of being buffeted into something that you're not happy with.
If I could choose one of the manager tools trainings to go to, I would choose the Effective Communicator Conference. Not because I don't want to be a manager and a better manager or better at hiring, but because the Effective Communicator Conference affects every single thing I do all day, every minute of every day. I am communicating with someone, and the Effective Communicator Conference tells me what my DISC profile is. It helps me know what other people's empty DISC profiles are. And then it tells me and allows me to practice acting differently so that I get better results. You can use the Effective Communicator Conference on the way home. Like literally as you step out of the conference room, none of our other trainings do that. And so I encourage you to try it. Next, the content. So there are two things that the other styles are looking for in the content of persuasive presentation, and they're things that won't come naturally to you. And including them shows the care and consideration that you put in. Others may not remark on them. They might not notice in the sense of, they might not say to you, oh, it was really good that you did this, but you'll get a better reaction if you do this because it's one of those subconscious things about the way people think and whether or not we serve the thing that they're expecting. And people will notice if they're missing. So the first one is bottom line up front, and the second one is facts. So if you don't give a bottom line up front, the high D's and I's will go, what was that? I don't understand what's going on. And they're 20 minutes in and they still don't know what they're supposed to be doing. And that's bothering them so much that they're not listening to you. The high D's and I's don't like to wait. They don't want to wait to hear about all the customer surveying you did or all the people you talked to before you decided upon your recommendation. Even though those things are important and understanding who you talk to, the constituents is important in a decision. The D's and I's can't deal with waiting for that. So they want to know what you recommend right up front. And if they trust you, they may not even listen. They might go, oh yeah, I like that decision, good. And they might not even listen to you talk about the customers. They don't need to hear it in order to make a decision. You need to have done it, but they don't need to hear about it. They trust you that you've done your research, you've consulted the right people, you've made sound recommendations, and they just don't need to hear the details. Now, the less they know about you, the less they trust you based on previous interactions, the more they'll need all of that detail in order to understand why you made that recommendation. But they have to hear the recommendation first, because otherwise all that's going on in their head is, what's the point of this? What am I deciding? When am I going to get to the point? Why am I listening to this detail? And so on.
Yeah, I think of this as like a fishing term, right? Either they trust you and that's it. You've delivered your message. They heard it. You know, you're good. Or you're setting the hook.
Yes.
Right? You're setting the hook early so that then they are listening and they know what they're listening for. And maybe they're going to ask some difficult questions. Maybe they're going to jump in. And that's okay if they're listening, right? It's better that they're listening and engaged than that they've tuned out because they say, I don't even know what the point is here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why executives, the majority of D's and I's, want executive summaries. It's not that they have a limited time to read, but it's also that they don't want to read for a long time. They just want to get to the point and then ask for the backup afterwards if they need it.
Absolutely. And the other thing is facts. High D's and high C's focus on the facts, the numbers, the commercial rationale, the efficiency of a decision. To them, if the numbers make sense, they don't need any more evidence. They can make a decision right then, irrespective of the effect on the people involved. This is not to say that our high D's and high C's are cold-hearted or unsympathetic or hard-hearted. They're not necessarily. There are thousands of variables that make a decision right or wrong, and we all narrow our focus down to those that are the most important to us. High D's and high C's narrow down on numbers and facts. And you high S's that are listening to this, you narrow down on people. But a good decision is good for the numbers and the people. So we're not asking you to sacrifice people here. Just find a way forward that has a logical commercial rationale too, and make sure you say that part out loud during your presentation.
Yeah. Next, pre-wire. And pre-wiring is just the act of talking to the people you're going to present to before you present to them. So you find out who's going to be in the room, you find out who's going to make the decision, and when you've started your presentation, when you've got your deck ready and you've got your bottom line up front, and you've put your facts in and you've got your head straight around it, you go to those people and say, hey, this is my recommendation, this is what I'm planning to present. And you listen to their feedback. And we have an entire podcast about this, so you can go look for it. It's called Pre-Wire, because we named it properly. But as you listen to people's feedback, you can make your presentation more effective. And that doesn't mean changing it to make everyone happy. That's why we did the bat map earlier, because what we don't want you to do is morph this presentation into something that can't work or is difficult or that you just don't feel like you can stand behind because you've been trying to please everybody. But it is about making changes that make it more persuasive for the people that are going to be watching. So for example, a high D might say, I don't understand what the point of this slide is. And all you have to do is change the title so that there's a clearer idea of what you were trying to say on this slide.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. I mean, if you're taking some of the guidance from this cast and implementing it, pre-wiring is a great way to know whether you're implementing it well, right? Whether you've done it. To your point about a high D saying, I don't really understand what the point here is. Well, then you don't have a strong enough bluff. Your bottom line up front is not clear enough. I mean, that's great feedback. When your high I says, is it very much longer? Then you know you've got maybe a little bit too much detail. You're providing too much extraneous information. When you provide, you know, when you pre-wire with a high C, the high C says, well, how do you know that, right? They're the ones who are going to ask those questions about, oh, you know, how'd you get to that number? Well, then you're missing something. You're missing a step in the logical progression, or you're missing a fact or a number. Pre-wiring is a great way to validate some of the work that you've already put into this. Most high S's are good at pre-wiring because pre-wiring is considering other people, and high S's being reserved and people-focused are very considerate of other people naturally. This is just putting an action to it and maybe having a little more structure to it. But I constantly, when I talk to people in sessions, you know, in person or virtual, or I field customer service inquiries, constantly I hear people tell me how pre-wiring is one of their all-time favorite casts.
Yes.
It's a cast that really helped them be more effective in running meetings and giving presentations. Yeah, it's very helpful.
And what we're not saying is change everything, because if you think about it, if the high I says, is it very much longer? And we say, you've got too much detail. And the high C says, "Where? How do you know where are the facts and numbers?" And you want to add that detail. Those two things are opposing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean you have to change it. You could do an addendum, a handout that had all the detail in it. Or you could say, I'll send you the numbers afterwards in a spreadsheet, you know, for the high C's who want to see the detail and not do it in the presentation. So there are ways of balancing the competing desires. If you do the bottom line up front, the D's and I's are more likely to be happy listening to some detail later that will make the C's happy.
I think of it also as, and maybe I'm a little too people focused when I present, but I think of it as, if I know that that question is out there, it's mm-hmm. maybe I'm not answering it overtly in the presentation to start, or that's not part of my, you know, baseline presentation. But if I deliver that piece of content or that note and I gauge the faces of the people in the audience and I see some confusion or I see some, maybe it's not landing, then I can, instead of saying, oh, you know, it seems like you guys don't understand, or that, you know, do you have any questions? I know maybe it's that thing.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
And I can easily say, well, here's a better way to say that. Right. And then I can, you know, try to deliver the answer to that question, even if I don't add it into my presentation because I don't want it to be too extraneous.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of different nuanced ways to do that.
Or you might think, I'm going to give some high-level numbers. The high C's might ask me a question about how I derived those, so I'll make sure I remember that I
absolutely.
Have that written down on a piece of paper, or I have some other information. Like, I've thought about that, and I can say it in the answer to a question, and again, not include it in the major part of the presentation.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
And it's the changes you make to after all these conversations that means that on the day, you just get, yes, we agree. It's so easy. No argument, no questions, just agreement. And that presentation just goes perfectly because you've done all the work ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Our next point is rehearse. We recommend that you rehearse your presentation. Rehearsing allows you to hone your message and therefore be quicker for those who are, you know, for those impatient high I's and high D's. It means that you say the right words, even if you're nervous. It allows you to focus on the people in the room rather than the words that you're saying. It allows you to make eye contact instead of looking at notes. Gosh, yeah.
So many good things that make presenting easier when you've rehearsed.
Yeah. Everyone knows that watching a presenter that's looking down at their notes is not as engaging. It's not as persuasive. And yet, not enough people rehearse
mm-hmm.
in order to overcome having to look at notes. And that's the thing, right? Rehearsing hurts. It hurts everyone. High D's think rehearsing is unnecessary. High I's think that rehearsing is boring. High C's can never be good enough. And high S's, it makes you uncomfortable to be standing in front of the room as if you know it all. No one likes to rehearse. Everyone from the mail clerk to the CEO, though, would be better for rehearsing, right? And so that's why we recommend you do it, not because we want to inflict pain on you, because we want you to be more effective.
I was at a Toastmasters conference a couple of weeks ago, and one of the people presenting was a speech coach, and he was describing this CEO that he'd been engaged to help with his speeches or with presentations generally. And the first thing he said was, this guy was terrible and we started with rehearsal. And I was thinking, Wow. You'd think A, the CEO would know that, and B, it wouldn't be that simple to fix somebody's poor speaking skills. But actually, rehearsal was the first thing they did. And to some extent, the way he described it was, all the guy needed to do was practice and fix like three small things, and it got exponentially better. So it's amazing. High S's don't want to present generally. It's uncomfortable for you probably to stand up in front of people and make recommendations. It feels very definite, very bossy, for want of a better word.
Assertive.
Assertive, yeah. But if you want to make things better in your team for the people or for your customers, and a presentation is necessary, then presenting is a necessary evil. You're going to have to get over it in order to get the outcome that you want. And the way out is through. And you can present as well, if not better, than other styles, as long as you make the changes that we've recommended and rehearse.
That's right.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.